Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not kidding when I say I could not have started this show at 10:59. Just a minute earlier and I would have been fucked. But somehow I scrambled. I got everything ready here for you. My hair is a fucking mess, but who gives a shit? You're here to hear what I say, not look at my oh-so-incredible white boy fro. A lot of stuff to talk about today. We had a Republican debate last night. I'm not going to get to a full breakdown of that, but I do have, some choice moments for you that we can discuss. I also have the opening statement from RNC head Reince Priebus, where he wants to pretend like history doesn't exist and the Republican Party is the party of equality. Oh, that's so cute. We're going to talk about that. I got a lot of stuff for you. We have Donald Trump. I mean, he keeps repeating what should be morally abhorrent and disqualifying to in any rational, sane world. Like, he keeps arguing that we should be more like ISIS. And, what's stunning is that it generates fewer headlines than his fucking naughty language. Like, when he curses, that's somehow, more abhorrent in the mind of the mainstream media than him flat out saying, hey, we should be quite a bit more like jihadists. So hopefully I won't blow a gasket here live on air as we talk about that stuff. Also, later on, I have one of the dumbest court decisions I've ever read in my life. You're gonna be amazed at who apparently is to blame for 9/11. It's not anybody who was in any way, shape, or form involved in 9/11, but nonetheless, they're now responsible, according to a ridiculous court decision. And we also have some fundamentalist Christians who think that Donald Trump is kind of like Jesus. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried, man. I don't understand. Like, people who don't enjoy the news, I don't know what's wrong with them. Like, you just must not be reading what I'm fucking reading. And also, we have an incredible story from RT. They got video on what's called the Basha Boys in Afghanistan. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a cultural practice of child prostitution. There's literal video of, like, the training of the child prostitutes. It is horrendous. So we'll talk about that and much more. So let's get started, and we'll kick it off with the RNC chair and his ridiculous comments that, of course, everybody has to pretend like these are serious comments because, oh, he's such a serious person with a serious position. But we will not do that. We will be mocking him mercilessly. All right, let's get started. RNC head Reince Priebus gave some interesting comments at the start of the Republican debate yesterday. Let's listen.
Welcome you to the debate of our great party, the party of equality, the party of freedom, the party of opportunity. And I want to get something really clear, because there's been a lot of talk about this. This party is going to support the nominee, whoever that is, 100%. There's no question about that. What I want to do is explain that what's happening here is that these candidates are competing to see who is going to be the nominee that joins the Republican National Committee, the Republican Party, all of you, the conservatives, the Tea Party, our entire wonderful group of people that are going to come together and unify in Cleveland and get behind that nominee. That's what we do. as Republicans. Can you at least agree with me, without question, that any one of these four gentlemen would be a world better than Hillary Clinton or a socialist in Bernie Sanders? We have something to fight for. We're in a battle for freedom in this country. It's the same battle that founded this country.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is like Democrats and Republicans live in different worlds. The Republicans are living in a fact-free world that makes no sense, and the Democrats are living in the normal world. Who can look at Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, John Kasich, and Marco Rubio and say, yeah, any one of those would be better than Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders? They think they're issues-focused. That's fucking mind-boggling. You're the party that just had a debate that focused on Donald Trump's dick. You're like, well, you know, we're the serious people over here, you know. And then in this debate, which was in Florida, they're talking about how climate change isn't real. Marco Rubio was lecturing climate scientists. Unbelievable. And again, they think like, we nailed it. We're better than those other guys, right? Even for Hillary Clinton now, she's got a trillion problems. We hit her all the time when it, you know, especially when it's on her Wall Street connections and her voting record when it comes to foreign policy. But at least she acknowledges scientific consensus. I mean, it's an open question as to what she'd actually do. She's had a horrible record on fracking, for example, so perhaps she would be bad in that area. But at least she acknowledges that something's happening. These guys are like, no, I disregard it completely. I will pretend like it's not real, and then I'll say that we're the serious party. It's absolutely baffling, and it's hard to be optimistic about the future when one of two major political parties in the U.S., they just outright disregard scientific consensus. And look how self-righteous this prick is. He says, we're the party of equality and the party of freedom. Oh, I know. So you're the party of equality, which is why you never ran the Southern strategy for your various presidential campaigns, right? No, you did the opposite. You ran the Southern strategy for decades. You're still, to an extent, running the Southern strategy. You guys know what the Southern strategy is? When Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, there was this famous quote where he said, the Democrats are going to lose the South for a generation. Because at the time, Democrats in the South were the conservatives, and they were racist. And when LBJ, who's a Democrat, signed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, he knew that all those Southern white racists were no longer going to vote for the Democrats because now the Democrats actually care about minorities. So the parties flipped in the South specifically, and now all the racists ran into the arms of the Republicans. And the Republicans viewed this as something that strategically could be good for them. Now they have to appeal to racists in the South, you know, white old bigots, and that's their voting base. And ever since the Civil Rights Act, they've been running one version or another of that campaign strategy, which is why you rarely, if ever, hear anything policy-wise that would help minority communities in Republican debates, which is why they never push for anything that would help minority communities, which is why, you know, obviously they pander to old white racists. So, and that's the official strategy. The head of the RNC admitted this not that long ago, and it's not, again, this isn't like it's, you know, some sort of liberal conspiracy or something that's not known. It's historical record. We know what they did. We know where all the Southern racists went when LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, and they were like, well, then we're going to go to the Republicans. So we know that they're not the party of equality. That's the whole point of the party, and it's been for decades. But they have the nerve and the gall to just pretend, you know, they come out there. We are the party of equality. Oh, I know. And in every respect, right? So I'm sure that the Republicans can't wait to vote for the Equal Pay Act that the Democrats have recently proposed, right? No, they won't. And for those of you who don't know, this is specifically a piece of legislation which says that we need to have pay transparency. So if a man and a woman are hired by a company and they're doing the same job, and you have to be able to see what both of them are getting paid, and then if there is a discrepancy, you know, the business would have to be able to say, well, here's why there's this discrepancy. And if they can't explain that, well, then it would be equal pay. So it's basically a pay transparency law that pushes towards equality. Since you guys are the party of equality, you're in favor of that, right? No, you're not. Not only do you vote against stuff like that, oftentimes they filibuster stuff like that. The Lilly Ledbetter Act, which President Obama, I think it was his first bill proposed or first bill signed, it made it so that the statute of limitations on pay equality cases, pay discrepancy cases, it starts from when the person learns that there's a pay discrepancy. So Lilly Ledbetter was getting paid less than her male colleagues for doing the same work and being equally productive, and she didn't find out about it until way later on. And then when she found out about it, she tried to sue, and they said, well, no, the statute of limitations ran out. She's like, I just learned about it. How the fuck was I supposed to know I was getting paid less for X amount of years? I'm like, well, tough cookies. So that piece of legislation says, no, it's from when you figure it out that there's a pay discrepancy. That's when the statute of limitations starts. And the Republicans blocked it. They voted against it, and the Democrats were able to get it through because of the makeup of at the time of the House of Representatives and the Senate. So, you know, this is the part of equality. If equality means the opposite of what it means, that's how the Republicans would be the party of equality. And the party of freedom, comical. So you can destroy this notion. I feel like Marco Rubio. I need to dispel with this notion that the Republicans are the party of equality. They are not the party of equality. To do away with the idea that the Republicans are the party of freedom, very simply, look at their record on the drug war. So many people pretend like they use the word freedom as this catch-all term, this campaign word where, you know, you just say it and it's vague and people go, oh, I'm in favor of freedom. That's what I'm in favor of, because it sounds like something you should be in favor of. But it actually means something. So if you say it in principle and in action you're not in favor of it, well, then you're a hypocrite and you're really not in favor of freedom. You're lying. So freedom means people should be able to do whatever they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody else. So if you're in favor of freedom, you're in favor of legalizing marijuana, right? Virtually none of them are in favor of legalizing marijuana. So don't tell me you're the party of freedom if you want to lock people up in cages for doing something that they want to do when they're not hurting anybody. And again, this goes back to the dumbing down of the political discourse in America to the point where words don't mean what their obvious plain face meaning is. You can't say you're in favor of freedom and then say, I want to lock you up for that. I want to lock you up for gambling, which is also illegal, or I want to lock you up for prostitution. And also, let's be clear, the way to make these industries safer is to legalize, tax, and regulate. I mean, if you legalize, tax, and regulate prostitution, well, then you actually have it in the sunlight, and you can make sure that there's STD testing and living conditions are right and pay is right. Whereas if you push it underground, it's going to be on the black market, and you're going to have vicious pimps controlling the marketplace, and that's horrific for the workers. So, again, more freedom on this front is the answer, and they pretend like they're in favor of freedom when they're against actually implementing things that would be more freedom. So RNC head Reince Priebus, he's an absolute joke, and you can see in his comments there, too, that they're really considering falling behind Trump anyway. Like, yesterday we did the story about how Ted Cruz, many of the big donors are pivoting to Ted Cruz as a last-ditch option. Like, I don't know, I guess we got to go to Cruz, even though he's not really all that controllable, because Marco Rubio shit the bed. But now, apparently, they seem to be hinting, like, I guess we got to work with the guy if he's nominated. And, you know, there's some talk and there's some evidence to suggest that if he doesn't get the proper number of delegates to get the nomination on his own, even if he's leading, that they're going to try a brokered convention and try some tricky stuff. But that would, you know, split the party in two, and there's no way that the Republicans would win after that because Trump would run as a third party and blow up the whole thing. But clearly they're saying, hey, if all else fails, I guess we got to do what we got to do, and we got to fall behind Trump, so we're going to support him. And at the same time, call ourselves the party of equality and freedom. Yes, equality and freedom, unless, of course, you're talking about Muslims, Hispanics, blacks, women, and all the other countless groups that Donald Trump has viciously attacked. Now, we're going to move on to another part of the debate here. Trump's comments on treatment of protesters at his rally. Now, by the way, we're going to get to another story on this later. I'll give you a in-detail story about what's happening at his rallies. First, let's do this. Donald Trump gave a scary answer yesterday when asked about his treatment of protesters at his rallies. Let's watch.
Do you believe that you've done anything to create a tone where this kind of violence would be encouraged?
I hope not. I truly hope not. I will say this. We have 25, 30,000 people. You've seen it yourself. People come with tremendous passion and love for the country. And when they see protest, in some cases, you know, you're mentioning one case, which I haven't seen. I heard about it, which I don't like. But when they see what's going on in this country, they have anger that's unbelievable. They have anger. They love this country. It's a beautiful thing in many respects, but I certainly do not condone that at all, Jake.
Some of your critics point to quotes that you've made at these rallies, including February 23rd, I'd like to punch him in the face, referring to a protester. February 27th, in the good old days, they'd have ripped him out of that seat so fast. February 1st, knock the crap out of him. Would you? Seriously, okay, just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees. I promise.
We have some protesters who are bad dudes. They have done bad things. They are swinging. They are really dangerous. And they get in there and they start hitting people. And we had a couple big, strong, powerful guys doing damage to people. Not only the loudness I don't mind, but doing serious damage. And if they're going to be taken out, I be honest, I mean, we have to run something. And it's not me. It's usually the municipal government, the police, because I don't have guards all over these stadiums. I mean, we fill up stadiums. It's usually the police. And by the way, speaking of the police, we should pay our respects to the police because they are taking tremendous abuse of this country, and they do a phenomenal job.
Okay, that entire exchange should be shown in classrooms as a perfect example of authoritarianism 101. Starts out by, me? I would never condone violence in my rally. I don't know what you're talking about. No, tisk tisk, violence is bad at rallies, let me tell you. And then Jake Tapper is like, oh, okay, so why is it you said, and I quote, and he goes through, I'd love to punch that guy in the face, hey, rough him up if this person annoys you, whatever. He goes through all the specific quotes, you heard him right there. And then he's like, well, you know, maybe some people deserved it. There are some people, hey, the protesters, sometimes the protesters get violent at the rallies. By the way, not true. 100% made up. You go back, you look at every single example of protesters doing something in a Trump rally, none of them ever got violent. The only people who got violent were either the crowd in response or the guards or the officers in response. It was never the protesters who got violent. And don't get me wrong, like, after a while, does it get annoying with protester? And sometimes, do you have to escort one out of a building? Yes. But it has been overt violence in many cases, and oftentimes cheered on by Donald Trump. No, but see, that is authoritarianism 101. He speaks out of both sides of his mouth. No, this isn't good. I'm against this. The violence at the rallies is horrible. And then in the next breath, and you saw in the quotes, he's like, well, maybe sometimes they deserve it. And then the final thing, the nail in the coffin is, and by the way, aren't the people who do the violence great? It's, hey, it's not me. Sometimes it's the cops. It's local security. They're the ones who get violent. They're the ones who throw them out. And let's just talk for a second about how awesome all of them are. Man, cops are super disrespected in this country, and they should really get behind me and continue to rough people up when they speak out at my rallies. I didn't say it. I'm just putting it out there that the cops are wonderful. Directly after I told you that these are the people who are doing the violence at the rallies. Remember, not true that the protesters did violence. It was in response to the protesters that there's been violence, and there's been many, many cases of that. And then furthermore, the audience cheered. They cheered at his quotes when they heard the, yeah, rough him up and all that stuff. Okay, you know what that reminded me of? It reminded me of the moment in, I guess it was the 2008 primary debates, where Wolf Blitzer asked Ron Paul, like, what would you, I know you're libertarian and you believe in small government, but what would you do if somebody got into an accident, they don't have insurance, and, you know, they're screwed? And it's, what, do you let them die in the street? And you have the audience go, yeah! And then they started clapping. Not everybody in the audience, but enough to be, you know, something of concern. Well, it's the same thing here. they're reading out purely authoritarian quotes, and I was like, yeah, strong man, strong leader. It's amazing to me that in the year 2016, we still have people that respond like that. Like, do none of you see where this is going? Do you not get that this is like a cult of personality? This is a strong man. This is an authoritarian. This is a guy who doesn't care about checks and balances. This is a guy who doesn't care about rule of law. This is a guy, you know, people have made the point, hey, it's unfair to compare him to Hitler because nobody's fucking Hitler. Hitler's Hitler. It's ridiculous. That's actually true. But could you compare him to Mussolini? Yeah, I think it's a fair comparison. He oozes fascism on a daily basis. And here you have, I mean, the way you answer that is, first of all, you never have those quotes in the first place about, oh, yeah, maybe you should do violence. But if brought up, the way you answer that is, I was wrong to say that. Nobody should do violence to any protesters. And the United States of America is built on the First Amendment. Freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom to protest. But no, of course, he doesn't go in that direction because, hey, maybe if it's against me that you're talking, maybe you had it coming. I said it yesterday during the debate. This guy's almost certainly going to be the Republican nominee, and then he's got a decent chance of becoming president. If that's the case, RIP First Amendment, because he's making it crystal clear with comments like this, and when he said at the rally, we're going to open up the libel laws so we can sue and win lots of money if there are unfair articles written against you. And let's be clear, what, do you think Trump is really going to be a stickler for the facts if somebody says something factual against him? You know, that's against his message and what he stands for and things that he said? No, it's just if you're against me, I will try to crack down on you and bankrupt you or do anything I can to shut down political dissent. That's exactly what this guy is about. Okay. Now, oh, motherfucker. I hate it when I get caught in that gray zone. You know what the gray zone is? The gray zone is when I don't really have enough time for another story before a break, but it's too early to just cut to a break. So you know what I do when that's the case? I'll tell you what I do. I do really long teases, and I tell you what you have to look forward to in the rest of the show. So that's what's going to fucking happen right now. Nom, 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 nom. How you like them apples? Tasty, right? Okay, so when we come back, here's the first thing that we're going to talk about. Donald Trump doubled down, tripled down, and even more than that, quadruple, quintuple, whatever the fucking one after that is, all on torture and violence against civilians and acting like ISIS. It's scary, man. Like, the guy is leading overwhelmingly, and he says insane things. Like, it's not, I get the sense that people think it's like, oh, he's just keeping it real and saying what we all want to say. No. Like, that's not keeping it real, and that's not what I want to say. That's not what every liberal in the country wants to say, and that's not what hopefully many conservatives want to say. He's advocating war crimes. That's not keeping it real. That's keeping it cretinous. So, we're going to talk about that, and So that's, we're going to go after Trump there and that stuff where I think it's totally legitimate and right to go after him and the media's doing a shitty job there. And then you have the stuff where they go after him where it makes no sense and it only makes him stronger. I got even more of people focusing on his cursing. Oh my goodness, your cursing is really bad. Like, when he says the stuff about torture and killing civilians, the proper response from the media is, stop right there. You're a war criminal. You're advocating for war crimes. This isn't debatable. Go fucking look at Magna Carta, go look at the Constitution, go look at international law, go look at the Geneva Conventions, go look at the Nuremberg Tribunal, go look at U.S. law. Go read that, and then you come back, and then you talk like an adult. But right now, you're acting like a fucking fascist child. That's the response the media should have, but they don't there. But when it comes to his language, oh my God, it's so naughty, this is not right, let me crack down on you for that. So their moral compass is so fucked up that it partially explains the rise of Trump. And I'll show you that. We got a new clip of somebody going after him for his naughty language. And then later on in the show, oh, forget it. For the NSA, it's done. It's done. Like, if you thought that the NSA was not spying on fucking everything, you're wrong. And now there's an admission. We have a story in the Washington Post where they say, yeah, what was happening behind the scenes is now just coming to light, and they're like, yeah, this is what we do. No warrant, all the metadata, can do it for any kind of investigation, not just terrorism, even though they told us it was only terrorism. So we got that to talk about and much more. Don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show.
Stolen my bread!
mind.
Let's pivot to this clip here with Trump. It's a pretty long clip, but I think it's necessary to hear all of it. Donald Trump has doubled down, tripled down, and now quadrupled and maybe even quintupled down on his most abhorrent comments yet in the campaign season. Let's watch.
Do you believe that you've done anything to create a Trump?
Whoops, wrong one. Here we go.
Look, we're going to have to be a lot tougher. We are playing with a different set of rules. ISIS chops off people's heads. ISIS drowns people in steel cages and pulls up the cage an hour later. Everyone's gone, 40, 50, 60 people at a time.
Well, you said that
we
said we got to play the game the way they play.
We have to play the game at a much tougher level than we're playing.
What does that mean, though?
Well, it means we have to expand those laws.
Does that mean cutting off heads?
No, it doesn't mean that, but it means we have to expand the laws. Look.
What is expand the laws?
Anderson, let me explain something. We are playing at this level, and they don't care. They have no rules, and we have these rules that are very onerous. I mean, our military is cut, brought in because you take up.
Geneva Conventions on
war.
Yes,
I know that, but you know what? It's funny. It's very interesting what happens with the Geneva Convention. Everybody believes in the Geneva Convention until they start losing, and then they say, oh, let's take out the bomb, okay, when they start losing.
So are you still in support of waterboarding and more?
I am in total support of waterboarding. It's got to be within the law, but I have to expand the law because a lot of people think it's not within the law now because of this administration. So they're allowed to chop off heads. And we're not allowed to waterboard. Somehow we're at a big disadvantage. I will tell you that right now. I was going to give you the analogy.
Yeah.
So they're sitting around having dinner. They eat, believe it or not, too, even though they chop off heads and even though they drown people. And they're talking. Can you imagine the conversation when they're talking about how weak and soft and pathetic we are, and they go out and chop off people's heads, okay? They can't believe it. They can't believe it.
The fact is,
just in a nutshell, we have to be much tougher. If we're going to beat ISIS, we have to be much tougher than we are. When you have General Hayden saying, oh, that's so terrible the way Trump is talking, that's why we're losing.
That the U.S. has to, quote, take out the families of terrorists. When it was pointed out that targeting civilians is against the Geneva Conventions, you said, quote, so they can kill us, but we can't kill them? It is against federal, military, and international law to target civilians. So how will you order the military to target the families of suspected terrorists while also abiding by the law?
As far as the families are concerned and as far as the law is concerned, we have a law. This all started with your question on waterboarding. We have a law that does right now waterboarding. They have no laws. They have no rules. They have no regulations. If they chop off heads, they drown 40, 50, 60 people at a time in big steel cages, pull them up an hour later, everyone dead, and we're working on a different set of parameters. Now, we have to obey the laws. Okay? Have to obey the laws, but we have to expand those laws because we have to be able to fight on at least somewhat of an equal footing, or we will never, ever knock out ISIS and all of the others that are so bad. We better expand our laws or we're being a bunch of suckers and they are laughing at us. They are laughing at us.
What's incredible is that people apparently genuinely don't understand why this is wrong, why this is problematic. He's leading overwhelmingly in the Republican race. So this isn't just a matter – I think people view this as, well, I mean, come on. He's the one that's keeping it real and telling it like it is, and he's saying what we all want to say, right? No, wrong. He's not keeping it real. He's not telling it like we all want to say. His arguments are profoundly stupid. Like, you do know why this is an issue, right? I mean, first of all, the idea that, as he's advocated on Fox and Friends, that we kill civilians. What do you mean? Yeah, we go after the families of terrorists. Not just the terrorists, the families of terrorists. The idea that that makes you better than ISIS. No, that makes you exactly like ISIS. Only difference is they behead you. Donald Trump shoots a hellfire missile at your grandma's face. So do you understand that? This is so important for people to get. Because what you're saying is, hey, when we do the same tactics as them, it's better because we're us. The only way you can rationalize that is to say, we're just better by definition no matter what we do. Or, hey, they don't really count. Like, civilians in the Middle East, come on. Do they really count the same as, you know, civilians in the West? Let's get real here. They don't count. We don't view them as the same. And is that position deeply bigoted, deeply intolerant, perhaps racist? Absolutely. Because what you're saying is, well, whatever. Who cares? They're, you know, Middle Eastern grandmas and toddlers. Whatever. They're terrorists in training anyway. So I guess just kill them and it's fine. He's just keeping it real. No, he's not keeping it real. He's keeping it cretinous. He's keeping it wretched. He's keeping it grotesque. He's keeping it morally abhorrent. He's keeping it immoral. He's keeping it unethical. And that's the main point, is that, so if you hear this guy and you think he's nailing it, you agree a lot more with ISIS than you think you do. Like, you have, your ride down the slippery slope just sped up, and you're going 100 miles an hour. You went right down that slippery slope and didn't even realize that, oh, look at this, all of a sudden I kind of agree with ISIS on stuff. That is what separates civilized people from savages. That's what separates it. It's not just, hey, by definition, we're good, they're bad, so we are civilized, they are savages, no matter what we do. No, if you start massacring civilians in the name of being civilized, you're no longer civilized. That would be a contradiction. And again, he's advocating for this. He said on Fox and Friends, and Jake Tapper just read you the quote right there, that we don't just go after ISIS, we go after the families. Yeah, grandmas, toddlers, moms, dads, innocent people. Yeah, go after the families. We got to do something so they're allowed to chop off heads and we're not allowed to waterboard. No, they are not allowed to chop off heads, but they do it, which makes them bad guys. Do you get that? And us, it's like, well, why can't we just catch up with them? Because they're bad guys. So you want to be a bad guy too? He's incapable of logic, like, and all of his followers apparently are incapable of it too. They genuinely think no matter what we do, we're good. It doesn't matter. No matter what we do, we're good. If we kill civilians, it's fine. If they kill civilians, oh my God, they're horrific criminals and terrorists. No, you're a terrorist too if you target civilians. So, again, if you guys can't tell, I'm fucking flabbergasted that this is now, he's doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down, quintupled down on this. And the thing is, in all seriousness, the media gets more angry over his naughty language than they do over this. And that drives me nuts. Like, if I'm Anderson Cooper, some people say he did a good job, some people say Jake Tapper did a good job. I don't agree with that. Because, look, all the time, CNN abuses the breaking news banner like nobody's business. Everything is breaking news. Yesterday, it literally said, breaking news, GOP debate moments away. And then above that, they had a counter that was counting it down, and it was 26 minutes away. Well, that's not moments away. That's 26 minutes. What? That's not like, oh, moments. Like, right? No, it's not. It's a long time away. So they can use the breaking news banner for everything. And then also when the ticker ran out, it was still like another 30 minutes until the debate, so it wasn't moments away. They use it for anything and everything. They literally put, breaking news, the Titanic sank 102 years ago today, recently. But when you have the leading Republican candidate advocate out-and-out war crimes, no breaking news banner. No, you know what you do when somebody says that? You put, breaking news, Donald Trump advocates war crimes. That's what you put. Breaking news, Republican frontrunner wants to violate international law. That's what you put there. But they can't do it because, again, to them, that's like commonplace. The things that really offend the mainstream media, oh, my God, Donald Trump almost said the word pussy. Oh, my God, he said the word fuck 2 years ago, and we have video of it. That's what they're like, oh, you're offending our civilized morality. No, but that's not civilized morality. Well, civilized morality would be is understanding everything about the Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Tribunal, the Magna Carta, international law, the Constitution, U.S. law, universal human rights. But they don't know shit about that, and they don't have those as moral red lines, so they're just – to them, Trump advocating war crimes is like, yeah. And it's become so commonplace because, remember, under Bush and Cheney, they also made that policy. They made that law. Read the Senate torture report. We did anal rape, anal feeding torture, hypothermia torture, sleep deprivation, mock burials, all types of out-and-out torture. That was commonplace. And then when Obama didn't prosecute them for that, now all of a sudden it's a matter of debate and discussion. But think about it. If any other nation had the same kind of conversations that we have here, apparently during our fucking election season, about, yeah, we're going to torture people. Yeah, we're going to commit war crimes. Sure. How would we talk about that nation? We would say, oh, this is just a rogue state. It's a terrorist nation. They're probably ripe for regime change because of how they're talking. They're promising to violate international law. This is a terrible dictatorial regime. But when we do it, oh, no, that's totally fine. We're allowed. We're in a special category. We're allowed to do shit like that. I mean, based only on our illegal war in Iraq, Guantanamo Bay, which is indefinite detention, it's extrajudicial, and our torture program, if other people applied the same standards that we do, they could say, well, we got to go topple the American government and put in a puppet dictator. I mean, they're ripe for regime change. Look at, they have a criminal government. They did torture. They did illegal wars. They have Guantanamo open. They're ripe for regime change. But again, you're not allowed to use – other nations are not allowed to use the standard that we use. So our Republican frontrunners can talk about doing war crimes in front of everybody, and it's fine. It's like that's what we do, right? And then we have the gall to morally lecture other nations. Oh, we're the world policemen, even though we're violating the law. But we're the world policemen because we just declare it. What the fuck is that? Look, man, it's no longer funny. It's no longer funny. I mean, if you're somebody who believes in the Constitution, if you're somebody who believes in the Geneva Convention and the Nuremberg Tribunal and international law and Magna Carta and U.S. law and universal human rights, if you believe in those things, as all civilized people do, then you say, okay, hashtag never Trump, which has been going around on Twitter, because this is inexcusable. Again, nobody really knows what he would do as president, but do you really want to take the chance that this is just, yeah, this is the new normal? And we've gone right down that slippery slope into a world where everybody gets to act like ISIS, and everybody gets to declare, as they act like ISIS, we're still the good guys. No, what separates us from the savages and the barbarians is that we have moral red lines. Where we say, no, if you cross that line, there's no coming back. If you cross that line, you are like ISIS. You are a terrorist. You are a bad guy. And if we don't do those things, well, then, yeah, you have an argument. You go to the rest of the world and you say, you can trust us. Look at our history. We don't torture, murder civilians. We don't use the same tactics as the bad guys. We can uphold our values even when the times are rough. And that's why we're better than them, and everybody can see that we're better than them. But when Donald Trump argues like this, many people around the world look at us and say, hey, they are my ISIS. If you're a grandma or a kid in the Middle East targeted by a drone program that doesn't give a shit about civilians, if Donald Trump is president and he declares very simply, yeah, I'm just going to bomb wherever I think al-Shabaab is, evidence be damned, wherever I think Boko Haram is, wherever I think ISIS is, I'll just bomb, and that's that. And, hey, I said we should target their families, so I'm going to target their families. Do you not get that in the eyes of those families that are targeted, that America is their ISIS? That's their ISIS. We just said we're going to kill them, they're civilians, and we just said we're going to kill you. What, we're still better than ISIS somehow when we're just killing civilians? You got to be objective about this stuff. You got to be rational about this stuff. And Donald Trump is clearly not that. Donald Trump is a bigot. He's intolerant. And he's advocating war crimes. And this has got to stop. Okay. All right. Now let's go after the stupid attacks on Donald Trump. Isn't it amazing that he gives them that, and they don't attack him on that sufficiently? Unreal, unreal. Trump was attacked for cursing for the 900th time here by NBC News. Let's watch.
Carrying on the campaign trail, using the A word, the S word, the D word, the F word.
He gets the nomination, they're going to sue his a**. She said he's a put.
Is that presidential? Are you embarrassed by that?
Are you offending people?
I was a little concerned with that ad until I saw it. I think it's better than any ad I've ever taken for myself. I do.
A lot of parents are trying to figure out how to explain some of the language they're hearing on the campaign.
Oh, you're so politically correct.
Yeah, on this one, I'm 100% with Donald Trump. This is now the 8 trillionth time that some reporter, some so-called journalist is like, you use naughty language, me no likey, because I can't watch a Republican debate with my toddler daughter. What the fuck is that? I got news for you. If you have a child, they're not interested in watching the Republican debate. They're not interested in politics. No kid in human history has ever said, what's Chuck Grassley's position on marginal tax rates? So this is, it's totally contrived. It actually reminds me of back during the Monica Lewinsky scandal when the Republicans tried to say, how am I supposed to tell my kid what the president did? I don't know. Don't say shit to your kid. Who gives a shit? This isn't something that it involves children. But all of a sudden, oh, Donald Trump used naughty language. This isn't polite for puritanical Victorian culture. We talk about committing war crimes as we don't use foul language. This is what makes us civilized. And that's the part of this that pisses me off beyond belief. This is political correctness. It is political correctness run amok. Get the fuck over it. Naughty words, whatever. But then when he gives you plenty of material to attack him, because it is abhorrent, it is wretched, it is cretinous, when he says, let's kill civilians, let's torture people, there you're like, what do you mean? That's not outside of the realm of respectability. That's not outside of the realm of civility. We had George W. Bush and Dick Cheney who tortured people and invaded the wrong country and did an illegal war. We're used to the massacring civilians thing and doing torture thing, so, whatever, you're still inside the Overton window of respectable discourse. But, oh my goodness, you use the word pussy! Why, sir, must you be so coarse in thine language? I can't stand it. And by the way, this is exactly why mainstream media sucks in the ratings now. Sucks! Did you guys know, you probably do because I've mentioned this all the time now for months or maybe even a year, if you take Secular Talk's views for a day, now you can't get the analytics to do it for just a certain, you know, 2-hour period, 3-hour block or whatever, or else I would, and I'd compare apples to apples here, but this is the closest we have to an apples to apples comparison. Take Secular Talk numbers for a day. You compare it to CNN middle of the day. Wolf Blitzer, when he had his 2-hour block, I don't know if he still does, but he might. When he did have his 2-hour block, we beat CNN in the middle of the day. More people are watching our show than CNN in the middle of the day. And I got news for you, half the fucking views that CNN gets in the middle of the day, it's fucking at airports and hair salons and shit where it's just on and nobody's listening to it. So why is that? You have this gigantic network with all the money in the world. They have everything available to them. Here, for fuck's sake, I got a computer, I got a microphone, I got another fucking microphone. This thing annoys me just as much as it annoys you, by the way. This is for the live show, this is for YouTube. We got minimal stuff, but I research, I have actual opinions on stuff that I'm not afraid to show to you guys. And you guys come more here than you go there. Why? Because they're like this. There's no logic in establishment media land. There's no reasoning. I give you guys the facts, and then I'll give you my opinion on it. Them, it's just vacuous, vapid talking points. trying to be neutral at all times. Hey, Democrats are half right. Republicans are half right. Don't attack me for having a liberal bias, a bias towards the establishment. This is what they have. And then the only time they go after candidates, it's shit like this. Mr. Trump, why have you not washed thine language? You should wash your mouth out with soap, kind sir. You've offended my sensibilities. Who gives a shit? We're all adults. And again, you think this isn't helping him? This is absolutely helping Trump. People are voting for Trump who've never voted before. I mean, they're mostly, you know, racists between the age of 60 and 75 who have just been not interested in politics, and they see this guy as an opportunity to get, like, a white nationalist in there. But it is stuff like this where they go, come on, that's how I talk with my friends in my living room when we watch NASCAR. Why are you going after Trump for being real? That's how people view it. And so because you focus on this, you get people defending him, including people like me, people who say, get over it, whatever language, who cares, you're an adult. And naturally, he rises in the polls and he ends up winning all these elections. There's a million and one reasons why he is doing that, but this is one of them. And then when they have the opportunity to say, whoa, 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 what did you just say? When he tells us to violate war crimes, when he advocates killing civilians as he did on Fox and Friends, he advocates murdering civilians. He advocates torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. CNN, all the nightly news. Did something happen that we should be talking about, that we should have a breaking news banner and we should say, oh my God, you just crossed a moral red line. You just advocated being like ISIS. Breaking news, Donald Trump advocates war crimes. Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Yeah, I guess he wants war crimes. Anyway, oh, let's go back to the fact that he said fuck. Media is so broken in this country. But I honestly, I shouldn't be complaining because I think it's what's helping us. I mean, the internet is this lion roaring up from behind the mainstream media, and they don't know what's coming. And I love also for people who are true conservatives and true capitalists, and they believe in the free market and they believe in competition. This is the best test ever of which media outlets are preferable. Please, please, somebody go take Wolf Blitzer and give him a YouTube channel. Give him a YouTube channel. Give him 4 years. Let's give him 4 years. See how many subs he gets. Let's see how many views he gets on his channel per month. No free market appeal. None. Zero. Even the better hosts. Like, even hosts that you might like, oh, okay, this person's not bad. Even they would suck online because there's actual competition online, and you start with buckets. They start with a billion-dollar or multi-million-dollar budget, all the money in the world behind them. They get just them in the middle of the day on a channel that anybody can tune into. And even then, it's like, they don't grow, they kind of maintain, they dip, nobody really cares, nobody's big fans. And this is one of the main reasons here, because of lines of attack and ways of thinking like this, which are just old school, out of date, and out of date for good fucking reason. Okay. Let me take a break. When we come back, I got a Donald Trump rally that goes awry, and you have to see the video of this, and I'll give you some quotes as to what Trump supporters really think. And then later on, Alan Grayson, who's a true progressive, is going to tell you why Bernie Sanders is actually stronger and tougher on foreign policy than Hillary Clinton and anybody else in the race. All right, stay right there, guys.
Floss, overcrowded, perishing rust, as if you fuck with us. We leak big homie, just got out. Used to be down, now he's just cracked out. He was by the horn and Darth Vader, in a sweatshirt, khakis, and Chuck Taylors. Just seen him in the driveway, getting beat like a smoker, boom, cause it's Friday. Oh, yeah, so you hit the hood in the air.
Guys, I got a lot to get to in my last 30 minutes here. Before the weekend, bitch. At least for me. Not so bad if you guys are still working hard. Give it a little bit. For those of you who work a regular work week, you'll be out soon. Hang on. Hang on. All right. I do have a video for this, too. You guys can't see it, obviously, and you're going to kind of need to see the punch. But this is why YouTube exists, and you'll be able to see it on YouTube if you so please. Actually, do I even have the video? Oh, okay, yeah, I do. Here it is. So a guy named Rakeem Jones went to a Donald Trump rally with some of his friends, admittedly as a social experiment. He says this is a social experiment, but of course they have a problem. They're black. So we're going to get to what happened to them in a second. Being black or any kind of minority at a Trump rally typically isn't the safest thing to do. But first, Think Progress sets this up. They say here, quote, protesters at prior Trump rallies have been dragged, kicked, beaten, choked, and shoved to the ground. Trump himself has failed to condemn his more violent supporters. Instead, he's invited them on stage to be publicly honored for beating up a high schooler, argued a Black Lives Matter protester deserves to be roughed up, and told a crowd that he wished he could punch a protester at a Nevada rally in the face. Quote, you know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, he said at the time. Okay, now, Trump has, he speaks out of both sides of his mouth. So he has said, well, of course I don't condone the violence. I don't know what you're talking about. But then he has a litany of quotes when he's at the rallies and he's firing the crowds up where he's like, yeah, they used to hurt people like this. Go ahead, be tough with them. I don't care. Why not? I'd like to punch that guy. So that's not acceptable. Like, this isn't something where you play games and, hey, it's up in the air. Who knows if he wants violence or not? Because his followers do the violence anyway, and we've seen endless examples of that. So as Rakim Jones was being escorted out by the cops here for protesting, 78-year-old John McGraw did this to him. So the guy sucker punched him, and then the cops tackled Rakim and dragged him out. I mean, that is just the perfect encapsulation of what's been happening with Donald Trump, and this is the perfect encapsulation of the far right in a nutshell. Facts be damned, what just happened in front of my face, be damned, grab the black guy, throw him out. Wait. He got punched in the face. He didn't start physical violence. That guy did. And they tackle him. And they leave the guy right there. That's unbelievable. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand. Like, so if there's protesters at an event, yeah, I understand that at a certain point, you have to escort them out. You do it respectfully, but you escort them out. So that's not even where I have an issue. Where I have an issue is he's walking out, and the guy just fucking socks him in the face. And then they tackle him. He's the victim of the punch. Unbelievable. Now, thankfully, he was charged later on with assault. But listen to what happened after the incident. And this is from Inside Edition. They got a direct quote from this guy. And this really tells you the mindset of these kinds of people and this far-right base. So the guy who punched him in the face said this, quote, "Number one, we don't know if he's ISIS. We don't know who he is. But we know he's not acting like an American, cussing me. If he wants it laid out, I laid it out. Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him." Wow. Think about what this tells you. Because again, this is a window into the mind of a far-right maniac. The other. It's the other. Be afraid of the other. Fear the other. The other is so bad. The other is so evil. The other is so wrong that perhaps it's rational to assume that the other is ISIS. So I punched him in the face. And oh yeah, because I'm so moral and he's so immoral, maybe we should kill him next time. And therein lies the massive irony and the contradiction that is the far right-wing mind. As they oppress you, as they victimize you, as they literally assault you, as they do violence, all along, they claim the moral high ground and they say, "I had to do it. You made me do it. You victimized me. You oppressed me as I beat the shit out of you. I say, perhaps I have to kill you, but I have to kill you because I'm so moral. And you're so immoral." Isn't it amazing? People that have the biggest victim complex and the biggest oppression complex oftentimes are the ones who lash out and do the violence. And it's always a situation of, what do you mean? Me? My agency is gone. They made me do it because they're so bad and they're the other. And I know I'm good by definition, so You've hurt me so bad and you've oppressed me so much and you're so evil that I have to kill you. You left me no choice. And that is the moral thing to do. That is the just thing to do. As I say, we should perhaps do the most immoral thing ever, murder you. I'm obviously going to claim the moral high ground and say, I am uniquely American and you're un-American. Except that person was protesting. And the First Amendment guarantees right to freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom to protest. So there it is, man. This is a scary thing because it's the mob mentality and it's taken over at Trump rallies. And again, this isn't a single incident. This isn't an isolated thing. It's been happening event after event after event. And it looks like people have just been waiting for an excuse. They've been waiting for some strong man, some authoritarian leader, some dictator to come along and tell them, hey, hey, it's all right. You're a bigot, you're a racist, you're a xenophobe, you're intolerant. Who cares? You're right for being those things. They really are the fucking problem. Those fucking minorities are ruining everything. So you're correct for wanting to oppress them, victimize them, put them down, sock them in the face randomly. I mean, this is, what are you going to do? Somebody's got to stand up. You got to stand up and fight back against this. Finally, you know, I'm giving you permission. Go ahead, fight back against this. He's leading overwhelmingly, and he's almost certainly going to be the Republican nominee. That says a lot about the far right. Okay. Now we go to the Washington Post and the NSA and what's happening over there. The Washington Post has a new story about the NSA out, and at this point, it's official. We've gone right down the slippery slope that all the civil libertarians and liberals warned us about. They report here, a while back we noted a report showing that the sneak and peek provision of the Patriot Act that was alleged to be used only in national security and terrorism investigations has overwhelmingly been used in narcotics cases. Now the New York Times reports that NSA data will be shared with other intelligence agencies like the FBI without first applying any screens for privacy. Domestic law enforcement officials now have access to huge troves of American communications obtained without warrants that they can use to put people in cages. Okay, so let's stop and think about this. The Patriot Act, of course, was implemented after 9/11. They did it under the guise of, oh my God, we have to do it, we have no choice. Sacrifice your liberty for security. I seem to remember people in the past speaking about that and how that's not a good thing, but I digress from that. So they say, we got to do it. What do you mean? We got to take away your constitutional rights because be afraid. Fear. Scary Muslim extremists. Ooh, give us all your rights. So they put the Patriot Act into place. Fourth Amendment goes bye-bye. Eighth Amendment goes bye-bye. Due process, habeas corpus, see you later. Forget it. So rips up the Constitution, throws in the garbage. Now, at the time, the provision of the Patriot Act that they now use to justify this, it was an open question as to whether or not it could be used to look at library records. Like, that was a big question when they first passed, like, ooh, I don't know. I think it's Section 215 of the Patriot Act where they're like, ooh, I don't know, man. That seems like it's an infringement upon Fourth Amendment rights if you look at somebody's library records. So they decided, well, I guess it is used for library records. And then from there, we went right down the slippery slope. It went from, well, this allows us to look at library records, to, well, this allows us to look at phone calls, well, this allows us to look at emails, well, this allows us to get all your metadata and look at everything that you've ever done ever. So that's where we are today. Now, if only we had, I don't know, maybe the person who wrote that section of the Patriot Act down today, they could tell us whether or not this indeed was the intention to allow Section 215 to spy on everything and collect everybody's metadata. Oh, that guy is around. His name is Representative James Sensenbrenner, and he says, no, I did not write this with the idea in mind that you can take everybody's information, everybody's metadata, and spy on all Americans. That is insane. That is not what I wanted. But the government's like, we kind of disagree. So www.shutthefuckup.com. So again, this is where we're at now. At first, they said they promised. Again, this shows you what a government promise is worth on issues like this. They're like, well, I mean, look, we're going to be straight shooters with you guys. The only reason why we have this stuff in place is to prevent terrorist attacks. And we're only using the information we collect to protect the homeland. And it's only for national security and terrorism incidents. That's the only reason why we're taking all this stuff. And then little time goes by, move the goalposts a little bit, suddenly we get, you know, news about how, well, it's mostly used for national security and terrorist stuff, but sometimes behind the scenes the DEA asks for some information without a warrant, and the NSA gives them the information, but it's only to crack down on big time, like big cartel, you know, drug cartel problems where we really got to crack down on them. So whatever, forget constitutional rights because, you know, whatever, it's convenient to just not abide by them. So, we violate it sometimes when it comes to big drug incidents. And then we learned, well, it's not really big drug incidents, it's just drug incidents. And now we learn today, they're like, yeah, we're going to stop pretending now. We take your information and we use it against you in cases for anything. The whole idea that civil libertarians and, you know, liberals are arguing for here is, all we want is the Constitution to be upheld. That's all we're arguing for. So nobody on the planet is against, if you go to a judge, get a warrant, and try to get information, yeah, we're all fine with that. There's oftentimes this straw man of civil libertarians and liberals like, well, they don't even want it if somebody gets a warrant, they don't even want people to look at their privacy. That's not true. That's nowhere near true. No civil libertarian or liberal ever said, even if you get a warrant, fuck off. You can't look at somebody's information. Of course you can. Of course you can. But that's not even the debate we're having. What we have right now is they have everything. They take everything and they can look at it without a fucking warrant. Go read the Fourth Amendment. You tell me, you know, what it is to take away from the Fourth Amendment. I said it before, I'll say it again. It's almost like the founders had a fucking crystal ball on this issue, and they can foresee technology like this, and they're warning, still allow people to have a right to privacy. Don't take all their shit. Don't spy without a warrant. You need a specific warrant naming the specific things to be searched and or seized. And they're like, yeah, disregard that, because, hey, it's inconvenient for the police state to have hurdles to get over and checks and balances. So don't worry about warrants. Don't worry about the Constitution. Don't worry about the Fourth Amendment. Give me all the information, and I'm going to use it against you without getting a warrant. Well, your privacy is just dead. It's dead. You have no privacy anymore. Everything you've ever said via communication, whether it's on your phone, whether it's on your computer, whatever, it's all stored somewhere. The NSA has it all stored somewhere. There was a huge facility they built in Utah, which was gigantic, and it cost a ridiculous amount of money. They're storing all the metadata, all your communications, all everything. This is 1984 come to life. This is, you have no more rights, and this is an Orwellian state. They tell you they're protecting liberty as they literally take away your liberty. If you're not concerned about this, you're just clueless on political issues, and you're clueless about your rights. And, you know, you have the old canard in your mind of, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, I guess why not give them all of my private and personal information? Well, forgive me for saying I'm not willing to lay down on my rights that quickly. This is something we have to fight back against. And again, just to bring this full circle real quick and throw something in here at the end, this is one of the many reasons why Edward Snowden is a hero. Because Edward Snowden was standing up for the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment and your rights as he's maligned by the establishment of being un-American. Un-American. He's acting the most American. The government's acting un-American. But he's smeared and maligned, and now he's off somewhere in Russia because he can't come back to his home because he did the right thing for his country. Okay. Whew. Let's go to Congressman Alan Grayson here. Congressman Alan Grayson, who's a true progressive, was interviewed by TYT at the recent Democratic debate, and he was asked about Bernie's foreign policy, and he had some interesting thoughts.
Senator Sanders has been criticized for being a one-issue candidate, not being strong on foreign policy. You know, the neocons and even moderate Democrats, when he says, let Muslim countries handle it, that's kind of not been the way we do things for the last 30, 40 years. How does he counter that narrative that he's not only about Wall Street, but many other issues?
Look, he recognizes that we wasted $4 trillion on the war in Iraq. He voted against it. He recognizes that over and over and over again, the military-industrial complex has determined our foreign policy in the same way that Wall Street determines our economic policy and that big oil determines our energy policy and our environmental policy. And he says flat out, I'm going to change that. And that's a welcome change. When you realize that we spent 8% of our entire national net worth on a war chasing weapons of mass destruction that never existed in the first place, you realize how screwed up our foreign policy really is. And that's the change that we need. That doesn't make you weak on foreign policy. That makes you strong, and it makes America stronger, too.
Okay, so he's right. And this is something I fall into the trap all the time, and I shouldn't, and it's wrong to. But oftentimes when you're defending President Obama from the attacks from the right, you slip up and you say, as I have, you're calling him weak? How the fuck can you call him weak? He's done interventions in 7 different countries. He's done drone strikes in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia. We still have a war going on in Afghanistan. We still have a war going on in Iraq, and we're involved in Syria, too. So he is immensely hawkish. How dare you call him weak? That's just stupid. But the real response is, you say, yeah, President Obama is weak. And you know who's weaker? All the Republicans. Because you guys want to bomb every single thing in sight. And that means you're scared, you're fearful, and you're little bitches. You know what actually takes strength? What takes strength is resilience and restraint and saying, look, I know when to use force. Now is not the time to use force. What takes strength is standing up to the military-industrial complex and saying, yeah, I know there's billions of dollars on the line here and a lot of people are making a lot of money, but I'm going to put an end to it. I'm going to make it so that blowing shit up and killing people is not a profitable business anymore. That takes strength. It takes strength to be intelligent about our foreign policy and to say, you know, maybe we shouldn't have 900 military bases. Maybe we shouldn't do that. That takes strength. For too long, we've bought into this right-wing framing that it's so strong when you bomb defenseless countries and kill civilians and whatnot. That's so strong. We're so macho. That's not macho. That's a bully on a playground. That's what that is. And furthermore, the American people don't want this. You know, the American people, look at the polling data. I love when we were first talking about going into Syria, when it was President Obama, I drew a red line with Assad, and we got to take out Assad. Whoops, look at that. The rebels are almost all jihadists. I guess now we turn Syria into jihadistan. My bad. But when he was saying then we got to go into Syria, the American people were like, huh? They did polling on it. It was like 17% or some amazingly low number of people that were like, yeah, let's go in. Isn't that incredible? So over 80% of people were like, no, why would we do that? Okay, we know what the American people want. We know what the democratic will of the people is. We know that there is no direct threat to the nation right now. Why the fuck would we get involved? It is strength to show restraint. It's strength to be intelligent about this stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. If there's a genocide going on somewhere, and it's super clear that it's not just a civil war, but it's a genocide, and one side is armed, and they're massacring civilians and slaughtering civilians, well, in that case, I agree that the UN should get involved and do something to prevent further devastation and further mass killing. Of course. But the question here is, what should the U.S. military do alone? When should we use our strength? And the answer to that, to me, is self-defense. Anything other than self-defense, and you're the one that's literally on offense, and that makes you the aggressor, and that makes you the bad guy. So let's not do that. And that's the strong thing to do. That's the intelligent thing to do. And we need to redefine this entire conversation. Alan Grayson is 100% right. Bernie Sanders is the one who's strong. And Hillary Clinton, Obama, and all the Republicans are weak. Okay. Now, I got 10 minutes left, and I got to speed it up a little bit. See how much we get in here. There's a story I've been trying to get to for 3 days. I haven't even gotten to it yet, and I might not get to it today. How sad is that? Bloomberg News is reporting on one of the dumbest court decisions I've ever read in my life. They say, Iran was ordered by a U.S. judge to pay more than $10.5 billion in damages to families of people killed in the September 11th terrorist attacks and to a group of insurers. U.S. District Judge George Daniels in New York issued a default judgment Wednesday against Iran for $7.5 billion to the estates and families of people who died at the World Trade Center and Pentagon. It includes $2 million to each estate for the victims' pain and suffering, plus $6.88 million in punitive damages. Daniels found that Iran had failed to defend claims that it aided the September 11th hijackers and was therefore liable for damages tied to the attacks. Okay. For those of you who really aren't political junkies and you don't know all the ins and outs of this stuff, you have to understand, this is utterly ridiculous because Iran had nothing to do with 9/11. Literally nothing. So we know that if anybody's more responsible for it, if you want to point to nations in the Middle East that are more responsible for it, it would be Saudi Arabia. What is it, like 16 or 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi? There's credible allegations of funding from top Saudi officials for what happened. We know that Saudi Arabia has funded Salafi jihadism the world over. That's the ideology of ISIS. That's the ideology of Al-Qaeda. That's also the government's ideology in Saudi Arabia. Now, they're our oil butt buddy, so we look away. Hey, business overrides anything, even if you massacre our civilians, so protect Saudi at all costs. Yeah. That's the way that we view it. Now, Iran, again, if you just have a basic understanding of the Middle East, you know that this is the dumbest court decision in human history. Iran, they have a Shia Islamist government. So it's still an Islamic nation, it's still a theocracy, it's still horrific in a thousand ways, and we've covered endless stories of how horrible it is in many respects there. But they're Shia Islamists. Again, the people who did 9/11, they're Sunni extremists. So they're it's Wahhabi Islam, Salafi Islam. That's not Shia Islamism. In fact, Shia Islamists and Salafi jihadists hate each other. They despise each other. There's literally a proxy war, a Sunni-Shia proxy war going on in multiple places in the Middle East right now. They're like, no, I don't know, Muslim, so guilty enough. You have to pay. And look at the way they worded it. Daniels found that Iran had failed to defend the claims that it aided the September 11th hijackers. That's not the way it works. They flipped the burden of proof. They're like, okay, people made allegations against you. They're true by default. Now defend yourself. That's not the way court works. The way it works is innocent until proven guilty. Okay, we're going to assume that the person making the claim is wrong until they prove they're right. So somebody says Iran is responsible for 9/11. Okay, prove it. What evidence would they bring up? There is no evidence because they have nothing to fucking do with 9/11. Isn't this amazing? And then, by the way, so you might say, well, whatever, they're ordering another sovereign nation to pay. They're not going to pay, and there's no way to enforce this anyway. Remember, we have frozen assets of Iran that the U.S. froze as part of sanctions. Then we released a lot of them and gave them over $100 billion of their own money back, and that's part of the Iran nuke deal where they're not going to build a nuke, and then we lift some of the sanctions. But we still have some of their accounts frozen. Apparently, there's a legal loophole that allows these guys to try to get that money through the accounts of theirs that we froze. So you accuse them of something they didn't do, and then you jack their money that you froze. Okay, if I was them, I'd be pretty fucking mad about that. They had nothing to do with 9/11. Unbelievable. Look, we got to be smart about this stuff, man. Is it rational to be against the government of Iran? Of course. They're a horrible theocracy. Obviously it makes sense to be against them. But because it makes sense to be against them does not then mean that anything you accuse them of, they are by definition guilty of. They didn't do 9/11. So this is comically stupid, and I don't know the process by which to try to get a judge to not be a judge anymore, but this guy's an embarrassment. George Daniels, you don't know dick about the Middle East, and you should step the fuck down and apologize. Okay. All right, let me try to get in one more. Again, I'm running out of time. Jim Baker and Rick Joyner are lunatic fundamentalist Christians, and they have some thoughts on Donald Trump for us.
Trump is saying some outlandish things. Again, I say, do you think this is perhaps why Trump is so high in the ratings at this moment? Is because he saw the picture of what's happening with ISIS and others. He sees the infiltration of every state of people who want to destroy America. And so he has said, we need to do something about it.
He's getting things out into the discussion. Mm-hmm. You look at the type of leaders that Jesus chose, they were more like Donald Trump's.
Hmm. The sea people. I was thinking of a sea captain when we were talking.
And think of how he treated them.
Remember, sea language.
We think of Jesus as just this big teddy bear. Think of this. He's some of the toughest guys you could find.
Mm-hmm.
He puts them together. They need each other when he calls them. Puts them together, lives with them for 3.5 years. After 3.5 years of living with Jesus, the night before he's crucified, they're afraid to ask him a question. John, you ask him.
Yeah.
He called me Satan.
Mm-hmm.
He won't call you Satan.
Yeah.
You think about it. I mean, Jesus was a tough character.
They're arguing that Donald Trump is like Jesus. That's unbelievable. Jesus, for those of you who don't know, the actual historical figure, if he existed, there's some evidence to suggest he existed. Obviously not that he was actually God, but you know what he would look like? He would look like a Middle Eastern dude. You want to know why? He's from the Middle East. So you know what Donald Trump would do? He would ban Jesus from coming into the U.S. That's what he would do. These guys are unbelievable. Now, understand, man, as I've said before, and I truly believe, every interpretation of a religion is by definition valid because religions contradict themselves and they're super amorphous, and you can be a right-wing prick and be religious, and you can be a left-wing peace lover and be religious. So it's not like there's no backing for the shit that they're saying. You could obviously go to parts of the Old Testament, and they would love those, you know, vengeful quotes and the horrific quotes and the bigoted stuff. And even parts of the New Testament probably line up with their philosophy. But it's amazing how they pretend like the only interpretation of their religion is the hateful shit. Jesus lovers for Trump is what we're looking at here. So would they acknowledge, for example, the fact that Jesus was literally a pacifist? You know what turn the other cheek means, right? Oh, you hit me on one side of the face. Here, I'll show you the other side. Hit that one too. Does that sound like Donald Trump's foreign policy? I mean, Jesus is the antithesis of Trump in that respect. How about when Donald Trump says, yeah, let's ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. I don't want to take any refugees. You think Jesus would be anti-refugee? How about the fact that Jesus was flat out anti-rich? Donald Trump's a billionaire. In the Bible, there are stories about how the rich just flat out can't get into heaven. The story of Lazarus, for example. They say, no, this is only for the downtrodden and the oppressed and the people who were left behind. You had your heaven on earth. Now you can't get into heaven. It's anti-rich. He's a millionaire. Nope, somehow Jesus would love Donald Trump. And, of course, if you don't have that interpretation of Christianity, you're wrong, you're a stupid liberal, and, you know, you don't know anything about the faith. Perhaps you don't know anything about the faith. Again, I get it. There are plenty of interpretations of Christianity and all religions that are violent and tribalistic, even by their nature. Even if your religion only preaches lovely things, by its nature of being a tribe, there's the in-group, out-group mentality, so it's dangerous. But then there's also the stuff that these guys totally ignore, which is the lovely stuff. And they don't know whether they're coming or going, and apparently they don't know dick about their own religion. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday, same time, same place. Mwah. Peace.